Well, this is a very strange turn of events. Not just one camera, but both cameras, the one on both computers, have both decided to stop working. So I am going to record the audio, and those who follow me on YouTube, I will try to catch back up with them later. Coffee can keep the boogeyman away. At least that's what I've heard. Drink more coffee and get more things done. To get the best coffee in the world, swing by 4501 McPherson, the Organic Man Coffee Trike. If it's just too far to drive, go to organicmancoffeetrike.shop. The Boogeyman has a dozen different ways to spell his name and hundreds of different manifestations. Every country on the planet has some form of boogeyman. Not all boogeymen can be kept away simply by obeying your folks. Some can swoop in on you despite your best efforts to behave correctly. Boogeymen have no specific appearance or conceptions vary drastically by household, culture, and location. They are most commonly depicted as masculine or androgynous monsters that punish children for misbehaving. The boogeyman and similar monsters can be found in many cultures around the world. Boogeymen may target a specific act or general misbehavior, depending on the purpose of the invoking figure. Often on the basis of a warning from an authority figure to a child. Then there are some boogeymen that prey on anyone who is a convenient target. The term is sometimes used as a non-specific punisher of those who don't listen to their elders. On occasion, the boogeyman is synonymous with the devil. The word boogeyman is used to describe a monster in England. It comes from Middle English bugay or bogey, which means frightening specter. The boogeyman itself is known from the 15th century through bogey man stories. They are also considered to be a lot older than just the 15th century. A booger bear is a legendary creature or type of a hobgoblin comparable to the boogeyman, also known as the bugaboo or the babo or the kukoi. Kukui. Ah, get it right one of these days. The creature has more names than I can possibly say, all of which were historically used in some cultures to frighten disobedient children. The boogabear was a demon in the form of a bear that ate small kids. The word boogaboo, with a similar pair of meanings, may have arisen from an alteration of the boogabear. In some stories, these creatures were found just about anywhere, depending on who you talk to. The word has equivalents in many European languages as boogle from Scotland. Pooka from Ireland. I thought a pooka was a giant invisible rabbit. I'll bet Vic Hermanson gets that one. In the 1950s movie Harvey, Elwood P. Dowd, played by Jimmy Stewart, is an amiable but eccentric man whose best friend is an invisible, a 6.5 foot tall white rabbit named Harvey. As described by Elwood, Harvey is a pooka, a benign but mischievous creature from Celtic mythology. Elwood spends most of his time taking Harvey around town, drinking at various bars, and introducing Harvey to almost every person he meets, much to the puzzlement of strangers, though Elwood's friends have accepted Harvey's existence. His older sister Veta and his niece Myrtle May live with him in his large estate, but have become social outcasts, as well as Elwood, due to his obsession with Harvey. Speaking of Vic, Check out Trailer Trash Terrors. A Vic, Beelzebubba, and a few more odd characters, along with Annabelle Lee, the creepy little girl who has a lot to say about both Vic and me. I haven't heard Annabelle Lee say anything about JJ, Southern Demonology, yet. Maybe in some past show. I've listened to a few shows, and he is quite impressive. JJ knows a lot of things about a lot of things. In Welsh, they call them a puka, or a bugan. The Cornish have the buka. In Norway, you have to look out for the busman. As I said, there are hundreds of names that are all used to describe the boogeyman. Descriptions of the boogeyman vary across cultures, yet there are often commonalities between them. These may include having claws, talons, or sharp teeth. Some are covered in coarse black hair. The nature of the creature also varies from culture to culture, although most examples are said to be a kind of a spirit, demon, witch, or other legendary creature. Some are described as having certain animal features, such as horns, hooves, and bug-like appearances. People have reported seeing a disembodied hand that scuttles about like a spider. The personality trait of the bogeyman can be divided into three characters. The kind that punishes misbehaving children, probably the most common one. The kind that more prone to violence, attacking just about anybody found outside at night. Followed by the boogeyman that protects the innocent. The largest majority of boogeyman functions to frighten children with potential punishment and not actually inflict much damage. The more vicious boogeyman is said to steal children at night and even eat them, or to commit some other violence. The last category is the boogeyman who protects people and only punishes those guilty regardless of age. Krampus can be likened to a boogeyman. He visits children who didn't behave during the year leading up to Christmas. A December 5th, Krampus comes around to beat the daylights out of the less nasty kids or to haul them away to some dark cave where he consumes them. It is difficult to find the original source of the legends. The boogeyman was first referenced for the hobgoblins described in the 16th century England. Many believe that they were made to torment humans, and while some only played simple pranks, others were far more vengeful in nature. Long before they had been called boogeymen, they were creatures sneaking about punishing bad children and sometimes adults. Depending on where you go, stories of this hideous thing or creature are somewhat different. In some places, he just messes with you, and in others, he takes you into a dark void or maybe even down to hell. In some stories, the boogeyman is a creature from another dimension or reality that likes to jump into ours to cause trouble. He feeds on fear and is able to gain power from this fear. That's how he is able to cross over into our hell realm. I did the show Oscuros in March of 2022. There are beings from who knows where that feed on people's fear. The more fear there is in the world, the stronger they get. Just look at TV today. All the talking heads do is spread fear about you name it. The world is getting hotter, only if you don't look back to the 1930s. War. There's war everywhere, mostly because some people are making a ton of money selling both sides arms and ammunition. There's going to be another, but oh, I can't talk about that. Legends tell of a creature that thrives on fear and preys upon the vulnerable. Some cultures believe it is a female entity, Others say it's a male. Some think it's just an entity devoid of a physical body. This creature is able to take on the form of what you fear the most. If you're walking in the woods or along some dark road, you might see the Dogman or maybe Bigfoot. If you're laying there in bed in the dark, you might feel a hand grab you. Some stories of the boogeyman are based on actual events. There are some sick folks out there, some who look on children as their playthings. Hamilton Howard Albert Fish was born May 19, 1870. He became famous as being an American serial killer, a rapist, a child molester, and a cannibal, who committed an unknown number of child murders from July 1924 until June of 1928. The authorities only tried him for 3 murders, but there is evidence he may have killed maybe 100 or more. He was also known as the Gray Man, the Werewolf of Wisteria, the Brooklyn Vampire, the Moon Maniac, and the Boogeyman. Fish boasted he had children in every state and at one time stated his number of victims was well over 100. It is not known whether he was referring to simple molestation, murder, or even as being cannibalized. Fish was apprehended December 13, 1934, and put on trial for the kidnapping and murder of Grace Budd. He was convicted and executed by electric chair January 16, 1936, at age 65. Good Lord, he was my age. Some will say that no one should be sentenced to death. It's not right. Those folks probably have never had a close relative or friend who was murdered by some maniac. Lock them up in prison forever so we can pay for their upkeep for as long as they stay alive. Gary Ridgway was sentenced to 48 life sentences in prison. On November 5th, 2003, Ridgway entered a guilty plea to 48 charges of aggravated first-degree murder. So, where's the problem? He's safely behind bars forever. During the Black Plague of 2020, convicts over 50 were being set free all over Washington State. A panel of 9 people began sifting through files, saying all these poor convicts need to walk. Gary Ridgway was one vote shy of being released. Despite what some folks will say, you cannot reform a serial killer. In 2021, Bill SB 5036 passed eliminating life without parole for everyone in Washington State. Now it's just a matter of time before the Green River Killer is out and about, adding to his headcount. A variant to the boogeyman is called the Sack Man. He is found in many Latin American cultures, such as Argentina, Uruguay, Chile, Paraguay, Brazil, as well as Portugal and Spain. He is variously referred to as El Hombre del Costal, El Hombre de la Bolsa, El Hombre del Saco, or in Portugal, O Homem do Saco. All of these names mean the sack man or the bag man. Another Spanish language variation is El Roba Chicas, meaning the child stealer. Similar legends are present in Eastern Europe, like the Bulgarian Corbelan, or Sackman, as well as in Haiti and some countries in Asia. Any underaged person outside after dark in Haiti might encounter Metmenui, His legs are said to be 2 stories high, and he uses them to kick his intended captives to the street. He will sweep you up and stuff you into a sack, and away you go to dinner. Only you're on the menu. Also from Haiti comes the Tonton Macaut, or Uncle Gunny Sack. Uncle Gunny Sack is the boogeyman of Haitian Creole folklore. He walks the streets at night looking for children who stayed out too late. These children are carried away in his gunny sack, never to be seen again. The descriptions of him vary, but he always had a gunny sack over his shoulder and a long knife. The name was later applied to the Milice de Voluntarios de la Sécurité Nationale. What a name. The paramilitary force of Francis Papa Doc Duvalier, Haiti's president for life. As soon as Papa Doc, who was actually a doctor, got elected, he did away with the police force and the army. These were replaced with the Tonton Mouset, the secret police. They would enforce Papa Doc's every wish. Anyone opposing him would simply vanish in the middle of the night. The Tonton would use their positions of power to do anything they wanted under the protection of their own colleagues. The citizens of Haiti feared and despised these men. A Papa Doc also made voodoo the official religion of Haiti. When Papa Doc finally kicked the bucket, his son, who became known as Baby Doc, was elected president for life. During the election, the Tonton Mouset would stand behind the table with the voting boxes. They watched as each ballot was placed. Anyone voting against Baby Doc was dealt with that night. Real live boogeymen. A German folklore has dozens of different boogeymen. Some of these creatures look like gnomes, people, animals, monsters, ghosts, or the devil. They hang out in forests, bodies of water, cliffs, cornfields, and vineyards. To confuse things, they also go by many names. The Bootsman, the Boogeyman, and the Schwarzman. One legend on where the Bootsman came from is an old story about a farmer who was having trouble with his fields. Herr Meyer was a pleasant man and a diligent worker. Unfortunately, he had experienced an injury as a young man, and as an old man, he walked with a very bad limp with his right leg. After years of watching his farm diminish, he took his troubles to the local witch. They called her a wise woman. The Braukarin told Meyer he needed a scarecrow. Not just any scarecrow, but one with enhanced powers. He was instructed to go home and put one together. Once finished, Herr Meyer was to bring the scarecrow back to the old woman, who would then work her magic on it. Herr Meyer got some old pants and a shirt, and he stuffed them full of straw. As he worked, he didn't fill the right leg as much as the left, thinking this would make the effigy more like him. Once he had a man-like figure, Herr Meyer took the mannequin to the old woman. She laid it out on her table and went to work. She said some incantations, and then she blew air into the thing's mouth. It just laid there, not doing anything. When she had finished, the witch handed the scarecrow back to Herr Meyer and told him he must burn the scarecrow the last night of October, better known as Halloween. Herr Meyer placed the scarecrow in his field and waited for things to improve. Soon his crops were growing, and the forest animals were not destroying any of them. The scarecrow just stood there, attached to the post in the middle of the field. It was only late at night, when the sun was down and the fields were dark, The figure in the field would move about, chasing away any animals attempting to feed on the crops. By September, Herr Mayer's fields were ripe with produce. In mid-October, Herr Mayer failed to get out of bed. He felt a huge weight in the center of his chest. When the doctor arrived, it was already too late. The old farmer had died. The scarecrow was still out in the field. It watched as the funeral procession carried Herr Mayer away. The fields were not harvested, and the produce began to rot. The spirit that had possessed the scarecrow left, returning to where it had come. The human-shaped figure remained standing in the field. An evil spirit spotted the empty shell standing in the overgrown field, and it slipped inside and began rampaging about the countryside. The scarecrow set fire to neighbors' fields. It killed livestock. It damaged farm equipment. The scarecrow began causing all manner of trouble for all the farmers in the surrounding area. The witch that had breathed life into the creature used her magic to try driving the evil spirit out of the effigy. When this didn't work, she used magic to destroy the scarecrow, causing the evil spirit to no longer have a host in which to do its nastiness. If you decide to make a scarecrow to protect your fields, be sure to burn it before the end of October. This next one is a tough one. The Hawaya comes from Algeria. It is a monstrous creature that is known for eating children while they're still alive. The Hawaya has a tail of a scorpion, one leg like a donkey, and one leg like a panther, the claw of a lobster for a right hand, and the hand of a monkey on the left. The chest is that of a turtle. It has horns of a mountain goat and a face of an ape. The eyes glow bright red as if they're on fire. Its long hair is actually living, poisonous snakes, waiting to strike anyone who gets close. Its coat is made up of pieces of the clothing from the children that it has devoured. The creature hides on the sides of the roads on the way out of town, waiting for any children walking alone at night. You don't even have to be bad, just out alone after dark. El Coco. I hear about El Coco all the time. It's quite popular here in Laredo, as well as most Spanish-speaking countries to the south of us. In some parts of the world, El Coco is called El Cucuy, El Bolo, Cucafera in Spain. In Spain, parents will sing a lullaby or tell rhymes to children, warning them that if they don't hurry up and get to sleep, El Coco will come and get them. The rhyme originated in the 17th century and has evolved over the years, but still retains its original meaning. Coconuts got their name because of the hairy brown face with three indentations reminded Portuguese sailors of El Coco. El Coco is found in Spanish-speaking Latin American countries such as Bolivia, Colombia, Guatemala, Peru, Mexico, El Salvador, and Honduras. In Venezuela, Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Chile, Uruguay, Panama, and Argentina, they call it El Cuco. El Coco, El Cucuy, or El Cuco is an evil monster that hides under children's beds at night. It kidnaps or eats the children that don't obey their parents or go to sleep when it's time to do so. Just what you want to hear. There's a monster hiding under your bed. Now go to sleep, or it will kill you. In Spain and Portugal, El Coco is covered in thick black hair, like El Mono Peluda. In other parts of the world, El Coco is more human-looking. It has bright, glowing eyes, and this is how you can tell where it's hiding. In Brazil, El Coco looks like a monster with the body of a woman and the head of an alligator, or an old lady with a sack over her shoulder. On her back, there is this large bag that she uses to abduct children in. El Coco is often the main villain in a lot of children's books. Where the boogeyman came from is different depending on legends. One story is this monster used to be a human child who was transformed due to our abuse. Others believe this creature comes from some other realm, such as maybe hell or Hades. El Coco doesn't always kidnap kids. Some stories say he just looks in through the window at night, keeping an eye on kids so they behave. Sometimes he's hiding in the closet, still watching and waiting. There are some stories that say El Coco will actually force kids to get out of bed at night. The child will be possessed by the monster to get up, leave the house, and vanish into some unknown place, never to be seen again. A lot of people have seen either El Coco or evidence of his having been nearby. They swear this creature was watching them late at night. I don't know if you can consider La Llorona as also being the boogeyman. La Llorona can be traced back over 4 centuries, although the origins of the tale have been lost to time. In some versions of the story, La Llorona is actually La Malinche, the native woman who assisted Hernan Cortes. In another tale, she was a beautiful Indian woman who fell in love with a Spaniard. They had a fling, but he lost interest in her after a few years. The villagers all castigated her for having the offspring of some foreigner. Not wanting to be driven from her village, the woman drowned her kids. Once the deed was done, she felt kind of bad about murdering her children, so she dove into the river and drowned herself as well. Heaven refused to let her in unless she could go back to Earth and find the souls of her kids, as she is still searching for them today. An entirely different origin story coincides with the arrival of the Spanish in America back in the 16th century. According to this version of the tale, La Llorona was actually La Malinche, a native woman who served as an interpreter, a guide, and later the mistress of Hernan Cortes during his conquest of Mexico. The conquistador left her after she gave birth, and instead of he married her, he married a Spanish woman. Despised by her own people, it is said that La Malinche murdered Cortes and all of his kids. The most popular version is a young peasant woman named Maria who had married a wealthy man. The couple lived happily for a time and they had 2 children together before her husband lost interest in her. One day, Maria was walking along a riverbank when she saw her husband riding by with another woman, a younger and better-looking woman. In a writ of felis jage, Inspector Clouseau from A Shot in the Dark. In a fit of jealous rage, Maria threw her kids into the river. A boy, that's an angry mother. When her anger subsided and she realized what she had done, she succumbed to such profound guilt that she spent the rest of her days wailing by the river in search of her children. In yet another version of the story, Maria cast herself into the river immediately after her children. In yet another, Maria was a vain woman who spent her nights carousing about in town, drinking and dancing instead of taking care of her kids. After one drunken evening, she returned home to find that her children had been drowned. She was cursed for her neglectfulness, and she was condemned to search for them in the afterlife. The ghost of La Llorona is feared She is said to be vengeful, and she'll seize children to drown them in order to take the place of her own kids. Sometimes she is a disciplinarian figure, and she appears to children who are misbehaving. If you hear La Llorona, it's time to leave. If you go looking for her and she sees you, she will follow you home, trying to get you to help her find her children. Any kid that encounters La Llorona will be kidnapped to take the dead kid's place. Way, way, way back, I was sitting on a road that ran alongside the river. I was close to the huge antenna off of Gonzales Street. I saw a bunch of kids walking along the road. They would stop and they'd look into the bushes as they passed. They came close enough to my vehicle and I asked them what they were doing. One told me their uncle, that nasty person that he was, kind of thing I would have done, had sent them down to the river to look for La Llorona. I told them all the reasons they should not look for her. In the countries of Central and Eastern Mediterranean, children who misbehave are threatened with a creature known as babau, babu, or baboa. In Italy, the babau is also called l'uomo nero, or the black man. He is portrayed as a tall, thin man wearing a black coat with either a black hood or a hat that hides his face. Parents will sometimes knock loudly under the table, saying that somebody is knocking at the door. They will then say it's l'uomo nero, the black man, causing their kids to go scrambling for the bedroom. A nursery rhyme in Italy goes like this: Lullaby lula, oh, who do I give this child to? I will give him to the boogeyman who's going to keep him for a whole year. L'uomo nero is not supposed to eat or harm the kids, but instead he takes them away to a mysterious and frightening place where he keeps them for about a year and then he brings them back. This next one is not a boogeyman to scare kids, but to scare their parents. A ghost named Wee Wee Gombell is related to an event that occurred in Bukit Gombell, Semarang, Indonesia. Long ago, a couple lived for years, but as time went by, the husband realized that his wife was barren and he kind of stopped loving her. The husband began to sneak around at night, visiting women of negotiable affections. One night, the wife followed him and caught him in flagrando delicto, red-handed, in the arms of another woman. She was furious and she killed him. The villagers, mostly the men, chased her out of town. She ran deep into the forest and hid. The next day, she committed suicide. Her spirit became Wee Wee Gombell. She hangs out in the tops of Arenga Pinata Palms, where she has her nest. Late at night, she flies about the area looking for children who are being neglected or abused by their parents. She keeps all of these kids that she catches, only returning them to the parents if they will repent and promise to take better care of their kids. This myth is taught to encourage children to be cautious and to stay at home at night. It should be used to teach parents to take better care of their offspring, or somebody else will take them away. Traditionally, the Wee Wee Gombell is represented as a woman with long, hanging lady parts, lady parts, and vampire-like fangs. Wee Wee Gombell is similar to the ghost known as Hantu Kopek in Malay folklore. The French equivalent of the boogeyman is Le Croquet Mitaine, or the mitten biter. It's also known as the hand cruncher. This weird creature hides under the bed. If you sleep with your hand or your foot hanging over the side, Le Croquet Mitaine will grab your hand with its teeth. I know a lot of people who can't sleep with their hand or foot over the edge of the mattress. This is one thing I don't worry about. I don't know why, but I can sleep with my hand hanging down to the floor at night, and it doesn't bother me. Maybe I should be more cautious. Originating in the northern city of Oga Akita, Japan, the Namahage is a ghostly ogre-like demon used to frighten lazy and badly behaving children into changing their ways, or else. Any child not listening to their parents will be snatched away by this creature. Legends say that Namahage were brought to Japan by the Han Emperor of China 2,000 years ago. This demon-like ogre stole crops and kidnapped young women and children from the villages of Oge. In a plan to drive the Namahage out of the area, the villagers promised to give up all the young women in the village, probably an idea by the men, if the ogres could build a massive stone staircase overnight. If they failed, the ogres would have to leave the area. The creatures agreed, and just before the staircase was completed, one of the villagers imitated the sound of a rooster crowing, tricking the Namahage into believing the morning had arrived and they had failed to complete their task. The Namahage left Oga and never to be seen again. You might say they were just a little bit easily gotten over. In another plan to get their children to behave, the people created the Namahage Festival, which takes place at New Year. Parents tell their children to be good or the Namahage will take them away. During the festival, people dress up like Namahage and they travel about the streets armed with swords and knives. Kids are told that these are real demons and that they're looking for bad kids to eat. The Namahage travel in groups, roaming the streets and knocking on doors. They ask the people living there if they have any bad sons or daughters that they can have for dinner. To make sure everything is in order, the Namahage carry a naughty or nice book where they jot down notes offered by parents on how they want their children to behave come the new year. They check it twice, kind of like Santa. After the children are sufficiently terrified, the head of the household will appease the ogres by giving them sake and rice cakes before sending them on their way. Newlywed couples are expected to divulge all their evil deeds that they were guilty of during their first year together to the Namahage. The ritual still takes place in Oga every New Year's Eve. Visitors are welcome to observe the traditional practice, but don't go abducting any bad kids. I don't speak French, which is a bad thing, seeing as my grandfather on my mother's side was named Bucher. I don't speak German either, or Scottish, or Swedish. I'll do my best to not destroy the following French names. In the early days of European settlement, the French people were among the first of Europe's nations to interact with the Wapanaki Federation of Tribes. A lot of Europeans thought the Indians were the lost tribes of Israel, leading to interaction between the two. The French began to trade with the locals, followed by living in their villages. This led to many Frenchmen marrying Indian women and fathering kids who could continue living in the tribe or move to bigger settlements to carry on trading with both groups. Some Europeans tried to get the better of the Indians by trading not so good goods for things the locals had. Some thought the locals would make good slaves back in Europe or working on plantations on this side of the Atlantic. The French chose a much more peaceful pathway to settle the New World. Commerce formed the basis of their relationship with the Wabanaki tribes. Furs, food, wood, tools, and luxury goods were exchanged. They also shared stories and legends from both sides of the pond. The Indians talked about their great spirits. Some were known as tricksters, some were heroes, some were just legendary beings. The creator spirit and the heroes usually established or restored order. The tricksters and the animals can have either positive or negative qualities depending. Sometimes they're helpful and entertaining, while at other times they're unpredictable, deceptive, or even violent. The Frenchmen told of their legends, like the loup-garou and gargoyles. The Bonhomme Sept Hour was mostly kept at home, being told to their own children and just before lights out. Bonhomme translates as good man, which is like saying an honest politician. It was a thing to give these stories names that did not describe the nasty creatures being talked about. A Sept Hour translates as 7 o'clock, so Bonhomme Sept Hour can be translated as the 7 o'clock man. As for the good man part, I think that's just a plot twist. Some say they used a nice name for this creature so that he wouldn't become upset and this would draw his attention to their homes. He is most commonly depicted as an old man with a heavy sack over his shoulder. Sound familiar? A sack filled with bad children. Seeing as he was mostly talked about in the Great White North, Doug and Bob McKenzie, eh? Go watch Strange Brew, eh? The Great White North is also known as Canada, eh? I have to say this. I have been to Canada twice. I know a few folks from up there. David Scott, whom I met because he thought I was someone else, and John Kirk, the retired Mountie. I don't recall either of them ever saying, eh? But I've heard folks from up north who do say it, so let me know, is this a real thing, or was it just the McKenzie brothers being weird? I was talking about the 7 o'clock man until I took that little side trip. Seeing as he lived up there in the north, he dressed in a huge coat and hat. He would sneak into kids' bedrooms at night and check to see if they were asleep, as they were supposed to be, or if they were sitting up doing what kids did late at night, before comic books and flashlights had been invented. If the child was still awake, he or she would be snatched from their bed and stuffed into the sack. All children who were taken by this figure were said to be eaten, or otherwise never to return to their families again. There are a few variations on the tale, which sometimes arise from other folk tales, and sometimes come from being lost in translation from French to English. One variation gives the 7 o'clock man abilities like the Sandman, with a magical sand that will put children to sleep when it is blown into their eyes. This is a more recent version, which made the 7 o'clock man seem a bit, well, actually a lot more benevolent. Scaring children into sleeping, which I'm still wondering about, was no longer practiced by a lot of parents. Another version of the 7 o'clock man was created because of mistranslation. Back when things were rotten, most doctors actually were there to heal patients instead of emptying their bank accounts. To become a doctor did take a few years, and you needed to work for another doctor in order to become licensed. Many distant towns and communities didn't have a doctor living within a few hundred miles. Anyone getting sick or injured would be taken to the local healer, someone who knew a lot of things to fix the human body, but was not formally educated. Most cures came from nature. Drink this potion made from the bark of the willow tree, and it will cure your toothache. Acetylsalicylic acid comes from the bark. It's better known today as aspirin. If you are unfortunate enough to break a bone, which I have, and it always hurts, the solution was to go see the bone setter. The French name was Bonhomme Sept Horse, which to me and a lot of other folks sounds exactly like the other French phrase. The bone setter didn't come equipped with any form of anesthetics. Maybe a piece of wood to bite on before the bones were manipulated. That even sounds painful. If you were lucky, when you arrived at the bone setter's home, he would not have a current patient. It would be quiet and peaceful. If there was somebody in line ahead of you, you got treated to the sounds of agony as the broken appendage was pulled and set. Any bone setter living in town would on occasion entertain the entire community with his treatments. How does a bone setter become a bogeyman? Once more, these parents who thought it was a good idea to terrorize their kids. They would tell the misbehaving youngins, "Go to sleep right now, or the bone setter will come and instill upon you all the pain and suffering he has collected over the years. Now sleep tight, and remember, we love you." Another possible mistake in translation could have come from a similar phrase, the bomb setter. This occupation was another name for lamplighter. Before electricity, there were people whose jobs it was to move about the city lighting the gas lamps of city streets. To ensure that there was light at the right time, the bomb setter would work hard to ensure the gas lamps were lit before 7 p.m., the time when the Bonhomme Sept Hour was said to strike. It is possible that this is a version that the city-dwelling French people told their children. There is evidence that this particular type of boogeyman may be separate and have the name Bonhomme Sept Hour in Montreal and in France. In the legend of Dark Earth, an animated story of the Bonhomme Sept Hour, things go from bad to worse as the story goes on. A brother and sister are working at the local mill when they discover that the hour is late and the sun is going down. Well, actually, the horizon is moving up. The siblings run to their wagon to try beating the darkness back home. As they tear through the countryside, a hooded figure riding a horse is coming up from behind, catching up to their wagon. This must be the 7 o'clock man, trying to catch them and do whatever nastiness he pleases. The boy, in an act of desperation, throws a bag filled with flour at the hooded figure. The flour explodes in a cloud of white, blinding the horse rider. Unable to see, the rider steers his mount off a nearby cliff, falling to his death. The twist to the story comes to light. The rider had actually been their father, who was trying to catch the two in the wagon to save them from the creature that was hiding in the back. The 7 o'clock man was actually hiding in the wagon, waiting for his opportunity to grab the pair and drag them off to his lair. Maine has a history of having been inhabited by people for 10,000 years. Before a written language could be developed, the people passed on their legends by telling them, usually around a campfire late at night. There wasn't any TV, and so entertainment was theater of the mind. As time went by, a few stories got jangled up until they no longer represented the original tale. There is a being hold of in Maine, who is a bad example of the boogeyman. The Indians told about Mata Hoodoo, a being whose name means the great devil. He was a practitioner of the blackest kind of magic, a sorcerer who would scour the battlefield to make magical items from the body parts of war dead. He was believed to be so powerful that he could cast a spell just by looking into the eyes of his victim. He was feared by tribes all throughout Maine and Quebec for his supernatural powers and vindictive ways. Just like the skinwalker, the Indians didn't even mention his name, in afraid that by saying it, it might draw him to them. He would play nasty, horrible tricks on anybody foolish enough to seek him out in his remote campsite in Muskakuk Mountain on the Allegash River. Those who did wound up as lost spirits roaming the woods trying to find peace. He is not mentioned frequently. This witch was so feared that nobody wanted to even mention his name. The few stories people can find likened the Mata Hoodoo to a giant cannibal. His location was uncertain. Some said the giant lived on Grand Banyan Island. There might have been more than one Mata Hoodoo. The First Council Fire says that Mata Hoodoo demonstrated his strength at the first council meeting of the elders by giving the bull moose its odd antlers and its unusual humpback by hitting the aggressive animal in the head. The Great Spirit punished Mata Hoodoo for his misdeeds by zapping him into a pile of ash. Not even this was enough to destroy him. It did give him a permanent smell of burning wood. The story from Seven Eyes and Seven Legs from the 1930s placed Mata Hoodoo on the Muskakuk Mountain near the river in Aroostook County, Maine. In the chapter entitled Mata Hoodoo, the Skull Decorator, an anthropologist named Dr. John B. and his guide Raoul went to investigate the stories of a giant cannibal living in the mountains. The doctor wanted to learn about this witch's powers, and he wanted to obtain a shrunken head as well as a decorated skull to show his colleagues. When the two men finally met up with Mata Hoodoo, they offered him lots of money and trade goods for their sought-after items. Mata Hoodoo had known for some time that the doctor and his guide were looking for him. The decorated skull that Dr. John was given turned out to be from his guide. The skull was able to speak even after being removed from its former owner and devoid of any skin. The skull, being his guide, would talk to him and sing and sometimes do other things. The shrunken head that Dr. John requested was his own. His own head had been shrunken down to the size of an apple, complete with a high-pitched, squeaky voice. Afterwards, Dr. John was seen wandering about the Aroostook woods well into the 1980s. Dr. John was seen wandering about Aroostook woods by lots of hunters and outdoorsmen who would encounter this being with a tiny little head. The doctor was made to live an inordinate long life to prolong his torment. The Nguni of South Africa tell of the Tikoloshe, or Tikoloshe, a dwarf-like water spirit. It is mischievous and evil spirit that can become invisible by either drinking water or swallowing a stone. Tokoloshe are called upon by malevolent people to cause trouble for others. It's least harmful. The Tokoloshe can be used to scare children, but its power extends to causing illness or even death to victims. The creature might be banished by a priest who has the power to perform exorcisms. The advent of the phantom Tokolosh came through the Bantu folklore to explain why people inexplicably died while sleeping in their huts at night. Traditionally, these people slept on the floor on grass mats, encircling a wood fire that kept them warm during the cold winter nights. Tokolosh are described as being short men, about hip high, who randomly stole anyone's life in the night unless they were lifted up off the floor in their beds. The short men couldn't reach them. Some Zulu people are still superstitious when it comes to things like the Tokolosh, a hairy creature created by a witch doctor to harm his enemies. In the middle of the night, the Tokolosh would sneak into a hut in order to bite the sleeping people's toes off. Legend says the only way to keep the Tokolosh away at night is to put a few bricks beneath each leg of your bed. This would elevate the sleeper too high for the small man to reach. In order to create a Tokolosh, the person with an axe to grind would visit a witch doctor. To get the witch doctor to create this thing, the person requesting it must promise to deliver the soul of one of their own family members. The soul is to be chosen by the witch doctor. It might be anyone in the family, and the witch doctor gets to decide when he's going to choose his victim. The witch doctor goes looking for a dead body, or he goes out and makes one for himself. You have to be really mad or not like your family to use this method for revenge. The ritual involves shoving a hot spike through the eye socket of the corpse and into the brain. This removes the creature's ability to think on its own. The Tokolosh is then sent out to terrorize and haunt its intended victim. After the victim has succumbed to either fear or has run away to another part of the country, the witch doctor is now ready for his payment. At a time and place of his choosing, he will steal the soul of a family member of the person who hired him. The soulless person is then a slave to the witch doctor for as long as it stays in existence. So there, I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. If you did, tell your neighbors, tell your friends, don't tell the people on YouTube. Hopefully, by this time tomorrow, or maybe the next day, I'll have the cameras back up working, and I'll do the YouTube video. If not, well, we shall see what happens. Until next Saturday, this is Chris James for Strange Things.